This is a photo of one of the anchors made for the RMS Titanic, a monster of a thing. For the time, around 1910, it was the largest yet made, around 18 feet or 5.5 meters long, and weighing at more than 15 tons. Hingley, the manufacturer, was so proud of their creation, they photographed it extensively and paraded it 2 miles from their works to the nearest train station, pulled by around 20 enormous Clydesdales on a heavy-duty cart. Far from being a solid lump of steel, the anchors of ships like Titanic were complicated pieces of technology that relied on a few moving parts to work, and even more complicated pieces of machinery to lower and raise. It begs the question, just what does an anchor do? Well, we all know they're used to hold ships in position when they're not moving. But why? How do they work? Today, we'll take a look at how anchors came to be, how they function, and what they do, and some truly impressive examples that show off the insane scale of maritime engineering. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm your friend Mike Brady from Ocean Liner Designs, and this is how ships' anchors work. People have been taking to the open water for thousands of years, and over that time, the boats and the ships that they've used have grown in both size and the amount of technology equipped on board. Sails have given way to steam engines, then eventually they gave way to diesel. Wooden ships were replaced with vessels made of iron and steel. Wireless radio technology allowed vessels crossing the Atlantic to communicate with both other ships and the shore. And today, modern vessels have advanced GPS navigation, safety features. But for all the things that have changed, some things have largely remained the same. All ships need propulsion to make them go, just as they did thousands of years ago. They need anchors to help them stay put. Before we look at how modern anchors work, we need to wind back the clock and look at their history and where they came from, because the truth of how they actually function will probably surprise you, and it's not at all what you think. Exactly how long anchors have been used is a contested topic, but it's hard not to think that from the moment humans first took boats to the water, they figured out they would need a way to keep their stopped craft floating in place. The common theory is that the first anchors were likely developed by early fishermen looking to keep their boats above a promising location. They were probably just rocks fastened with rope. In fact, what are thought to be rock anchors have been found off the Cornish coast in England, dating back from at least the Bronze Age around 3000 BC. If the anchor wasn't big or heavy enough for the boat, then the ancient mariners would often modify them to stop them from skipping over the seafloor, lashing some tree branches to the stone-formed teeth, or flukes, to fasten themselves into the bottom by digging into the mud. Now, although anchors made their appearance in history quite early, the technology to produce iron anchors, similar to more modern ships as we know them, was still a long way off. Alternatively, anchors were made with various combinations of wood, rope, and stone. Really anything heavy enough, ranging from bags of sand to lumps of lead. But as boats grew in size, and then eventually became ships, shipwrights knew they would need ever larger anchors to keep their craft in place. The US Naval Institute points out that different anchor types depended on the civilizations that used them. Ancient Egyptians shaped their anchors from elongated stone blocks, with a hole and a channel cut near the top to take the cable, and ancient Arab traders used donut-shaped ringstone anchors well into the early medieval age. But in time, ships simply got bigger and bigger. With stone anchors growing in size, they were becoming harder to raise and lower, and even harder to stow on board. Roman, Greek, and eventually Scandinavian shipwrights forged iron anchors. A very fine example of one was found off Scotland, called the Priestside Anchor. Crucially, these kinds of ancient anchors did away with solid lumps of material and used distinct components. A long main shaft called the shank, and a curved base featuring distinct flukes, or teeth, rising up to catch on the ocean floor. Roman designs featured a stock which sat at the top of the shank, or the main shaft of the anchor, and prevented it from lying flat on the sea floor, meaning that no matter which way the anchor fell to the bottom, one of the flukes would be able to dig in. As the decades and the centuries wore on, ships got bigger and bigger. They became taller and bulkier. It meant that there was more windage, or the part of the ship's hull that's exposed and responsible for wind resistance, exerting greater pull on the anchors. The ships, of course, needed much larger anchors because of it. The anchor's shape had changed very little. These now much larger anchors were difficult to handle. They were awkward to stow, so they had to be lashed to the outside of the hull. Anchors couldn't just be thrown overboard by hand, though. They'd need a special, dedicated piece of equipment to haul them up once they were finished. Enter the windlass, a simple rotating drum with a ratchet that made sure as the drum rotated it could take the strain and weight of the anchor without dropping it. Of course, the only way to turn the drum was human labour. Teams of men needed to put their backs into the brutal task, heaving against bars inserted into the windlass's drum. In the golden age of sail, the 17th, 18th, and early 19th centuries, sailors were well accustomed to trudging slowly around the windlass as the anchor cable clank, clank, clanked and lifted the massive anchor up. The story of the anchor's evolution is what we would probably now refer to as feature creep, because they just got so big and heavy that they kept providing fresh engineering challenges to shipwrights and naval architects. One issue had always been stowage. The old styles of anchor, with their big curved flukes and large stock, were bulky and extremely awkward to stow. One solution came with a redesign, when the stock of the anchor was redesigned so it could pivot onto the same plane as the flukes, which allowed the anchor to be finally stored flat against the hull. This design change was a huge success, but another crucial redesign came in the 19th century, when the French firm C.M. Martin & Sons came up with an anchor featuring a short fixed stock and arms alongside that pivoted out through 30 degrees. Now, this pivoting action meant that both of the anchor's flukes would be buried instead of just one, improving grip on the seabed, but also reducing the risk the ship's cable could get caught on the anchor itself and pull it out while the ship was pushed around by wind or waves above. The Martin anchor was really a spiritual predecessor to the types of stockless anchors that still exist today. In 1821, stockless anchor changed the game entirely. Its operation was very simple, its recovery a relative breeze. It could sit flush against the hull of a steamer. With its development came the steam-powered windlass. Now, poor crews were given a break from their back-breaking labour by the new machines that could haul in anchor cable with the anchor at the end through the sheer power of steam. Anchors haven't really changed very much since. You can still find stockless anchors on most large ships around the world. But actually anchoring a ship is a difficult and delicate process that needs all the skill of a well-trained crew. Here's how they do it. The first thing to consider is when and if an anchor is needed at all. Alongside wharfs or docks, ships don't actually need to anchor, they can just tie up to big bollards on the shore, and they're held in place that way. But sometimes, situations require a ship to stay put away from the docks in shallow bays or inlets. Take, for example, the bizarre series of events in 2021, when the cargo ship Ever Given ran aground in the Suez Canal. The resulting blockage caused a huge backlog of ships, which all needed to deploy their anchors and wait patiently off port said. So, the truth is that anchors by themselves don't actually hold the ship in place. Shocking, I know. If you dig an anchor into the sea floor with a small amount of cable, the ship's movements above can just snap the links and set it free or drag the anchor. Actually, it's the anchor cable itself, a vast, heavy beast of a thing that is paid out and holds the ship in place. And the anchor acts as a weighted end to hold the cable down. Anchor chains are impressive in and of themselves, and far from being just a long metal chain, there's actually quite a bit of thought that goes into them. Modern anchor chains are made up of lengths of individual sections of chain called shots, around 27.5 meters or 90 feet long. Different sized ships need different lengths of chain, and therefore greater or lesser numbers of shot. The largest could carry up to 770 meters, more than 3,500 feet, that's 28 shots of anchor cable, and all that length really has only a little to do with the depth of anchoring, because typically ships can only anchor in fairly shallow water anyway. It actually has a lot more to do with the actual force required to hold the ship in place. Your largest tankers or cruise ships will need a huge amount of anchor chain, many shots worth, for example, to be paid out so their massive drag on the sea floor will hold the ship in place. Crews will deploy a length of cable between 3 and 7 times the depth of the water they're anchoring in to ensure there's enough cable on the seafloor to do its thing. The anchor at the other end of the line will act as an immense weight to make sure the cable doesn't move at all from their original anchoring position. It's a clever setup that moves away from how anchors were used in the early days, even though they're crucial to the operation of the overall system. But it's a system that needs constant monitoring. Too much cable and the ship will drift farther away, and it could exert too much pressure on the anchor below, risking dragging it along the seafloor. But too little cable and you'd have the same problem, or worse, because a short jolt could even break a link and leave the anchor behind. The huge amounts of anchor chain are stored in the bow of the ship beneath the windlass, in a kind of giant tank called the chain locker. When the anchors aren't in use, they fit snugly inner hawse, a kind of reinforced bay in the hull, usually made of solid steel much thicker than the hull plating around it, to protect from the anchor's flukes when they're brought back up by the windlass. The anchor's shank rises up through the hawse pipe to just below the level of the forecastle deck at the bow, where the chain rises through a stopper or a riding pawl. Now, obviously, securing an anchor weighing up to 20 tons or more in place is no easy task, which is why the riding pawl is crucial, because it takes up the enormous strain and keeps the anchor in check. The windlass itself features a brake too, and the links of the anchor's chain align with grooves in the windlass's drum, so that as the windlass spins, so the chain goes in or out. To deploy the anchor, gravity does most of the work. Lashings are removed, the riding pawl is lifted, and the brakes are let go. The anchor's weight is allowed to free fall, and as it goes, it takes the chain with it. It's an awe-inspiring sight to see that much metal moving that quickly. Once the anchor is dug in below, the windlass can be engaged to actually pay more cable out. Remember, different lengths are required for different ships, and the different shots on the chain can be color-coded to help crews know just how much has been paid out. Retrieving the anchor is a matter of reversing the action of the windlass so it begins to wind the cable in. Eventually, the pressure on the anchor will dislodge it and lift it up and out before it comes up into the hawse hole and the pipe, fitting snugly in place once again. To help extend the life of ship and anchor, some vessels feature hawse-mounted washing systems which flush water down and remove all the mud and sediment from both the anchor and the pipe. Crews also need to be careful when anchoring their ships because sometimes, counterintuitively, too many anchors can lead to disaster. Deploying a bow and stern anchor, for example, will certainly hold the ship tightly in place, but if a bad blow comes on and the weather shifts, the ship will not be able to swing with the wind, meaning it would be at risk of listing, and smaller vessels like yachts could even be capsized and sunk. Anchors have often been used to hold ships in place in bad weather, though, while they shelter in shallow waters. In fact, Titanic's sister Britannic faced a very bad storm off Naples that saw her deploy her third central anchor, the biggest and heaviest of the main three, so that she could safely ride it out. In extreme depths, where using a standard anchor is just not possible, specialized anchors are available instead. The sea anchor is a device that slows the vessel's progress through the water in situations that might need it. By creating drag, sea anchors act as a kind of brake. Deploying one in bad weather can actually help prevent some ships from broaching when big waves come from behind and cause the ship to ride like a surfboard, turning violently around thanks to their hull shape and ending up helpless and broadside to be battered by the sea. Modern sea anchors look more like a paratrooper's parachute, with a long cable attached to the parachute body from the bow. Another kind of anchor is the kind used for maneuvering in port. Kedge anchors are relatively small, and when they're deployed, they can provide a fixed pivot point for the ship if maneuvering is difficult or tight. You won't really find them on passenger ships today, but they were very popular on big ships in the early 20th century. In fact, Board of Trade regulations required British passenger ships to carry a few relative to their size. Titanic, for example, had to carry two. One which weighed a full ton, stowed on her bow, and the other smaller half-ton anchor at her stern rail. The truth is that the presence of these anchors on ships like Titanic was purely to satisfy the laws which had become outdated by the turn of the 20th century, and some shipbuilders knew it. Researcher Bill Sorter pointed out that Lusitania's kedge anchor was kept all the way down in her number 2 cargo hold, hardly a convenient place. Of course, the great ocean liner's main anchors were enormous in their scale. Queen Mary, for instance, only had two anchors, although they were absolutely massive, weighing around 16 tons, standing 18 feet tall. A third anchor was also actually kept as a spare in Southampton during her career. Her modern-day equivalent, Queen Mary II, has even bigger ones, a trio of 23-ton monsters and more than 100 tons of chain. Of course, the windlass has changed a lot too. No longer steam-powered, modern examples are electric instead. So, that's why anchors look the way they do and how they work. They're clever pieces of engineering that do a lot to make mariners' lives much easier. Without them, ships would struggle to stay put in bad weather, using their engines constantly to try to hover in place in a futile battle against wind and sea. At the start of the video, I mentioned Titanic's anchor at Hingley. This was the massive central anchor that was so big it needed a dedicated crane to lift it out and over the side of the ship. Hingley, the manufacturers based in Netherton in the West Midlands, had been making chain and anchors since the early 1800s, but the order for Titanic was, for the time, their biggest and best work. They supplied Olympic and Britannic too, and they were clearly very proud of it. That huge central 16-ton anchor went down with the ship and sits today, still lashed in place at the very tip of the bow, where it was first installed. Ladies and gentlemen, it's your friend Mike Brady from Ocean Liner Designs. Thank you so much for watching this video. If you enjoyed it, please leave a comment below. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel because we get new videos out weekly. If you want to support my work and get really cool perks like behind the scenes and early access, please visit my Patreon in the link in the description below or sign up as a YouTube member. Come and join the crew. As always, stay safe, stay happy. And I'll see you again next time.